Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske File. We're back. We're back with a, we're continuing our Let's Watch the Star Trek The Next Generation here. If you're just tuning in, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation and breaking down each and every one of them, one by one, in chronological order of the show. So, as of now, we're up to episode 3 of season 2. This one's called Elementary Dear Data. It was directed by Rob Bowman of X-Files fame, written by Brian Allen Lane, and it aired way back on December 5th, 1988. In this one, a holographic adversary manages to take control of the Enterprise, and he battles Data in a battle of wits, I suppose is what you'd call it. This is the Sherlock Holmes episode, the first one with Moriarty. So for this one, Modi Operandis is going to join us to discuss and break down what makes this episode work and or doesn't make it work. Is that the best way to say it? He's around. He's going to talk to us about this episode, what we thought of it, and, where we go from here. So we will bring Modi on right after this.
Clancy, I'll be gone for a while, see that no one touches me.
Aye, sir. And where can I reach you?
He can be reached at 221 B Baker Street.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Penske File. We just got done watching Elementary Dear Data, and I asked my computer to give me someone equal of my own intellect to talk about the episode with, and out pop Modi Operandis. So, how are you doing, sir?
The Moriarty to your Sherlock Holmes, yes. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Sure, it's good. It's starting to feel like Next Generation.
It is. This is a very Next Generation episode.
It is. It's starting
for sure.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like Christmas, in 10 months, and it's starting to feel like the Next Generation. And I thought that this one, was strong. This is a very strong episode that I'm not particularly attached to. What do you think?
I didn't think it was, I don't know. It's got a good, I don't even know what to say about this thing. It's got a decent premise, I guess. I thought it was kind of weird that it's a gimmick episode, I guess is the best way of describing it. It's because it's the Elementary Dear Data title and they get in queue with everything and,
yep.
The Sherlock bit. And it's an interesting way to frame the idea of the holodeck creating life kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah. So,
I do like that aspect of it, but the framing of it with the Sherlock Holmes thing, I guess, is fine. It just feels a little trying to be a little cute, I guess.
Yeah. I'm never a huge fan when casts of a show, sort of become different other characters,
Mm-hmm.
I prefer it if they were just in the Star Trek universe, which they are, but they're on the holodeck, and that's always a problem I have with the holodeck episodes in general. But yeah, I guess the crux of this episode is that Data and Geordi are dicking around in the holodeck, and they
want to play a game. Yeah, it's imagination time for them.
And Data knows all of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, so he immediately solves things without having to go through the deductive reasoning to solve anything.
Right.
So Geordi gets upset, and he makes a challenge of Data where he asks the holodeck to construct a foe that is worthy of Data. And notice he says Data instead of Sherlock Holmes.
Which, is for a major plot point, it seems like a very small thing it hinges upon,
Yeah, I thought it was a very, it's like a very, it seems like the holodeck could be catastrophic if it takes.
It's like a genie of the lamp situation where you wish for something and it turns out the opposite of what you meant kind of thing. It's almost what it's like.
Yeah, it is. It's just so, well, we'll get into it, but they come up with Moriarty. Moriarty becomes a sentient life form, and at the he sort of causes havoc on the ship. He takes control of the ship. Picard goes in, talks him down, and then they shut Moriarty down, and that's the end of the episode. That's the broad strokes of it. I thought this one was, I can't come up with many negatives. We were talking before we started recording. I was like, I don't really know what there is to talk about how long, because there's not a lot wrong with this one. It just doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't grab me in any.
It's ground we've already tread to. As far as there's stuff to talk about with Pulaski's again contempt for Data.
I'll give you credit for your vast knowledge, but your circuits would just short out if you were confronted with a truly original mystery. It's elementary, dear Data.
And just denying all possibility that he could be alive.
Yep.
So there's, we've already covered that ground, like last episode probably, actually.
Yeah. It's going to be
because it's every episode in season
theme.
Two, pretty much.
Yeah, because yeah. We just watched Outrageous O'Connor and did a podcast on that one. She's not in that one, actually, so it's kind of a nice break. But it's the, you know, it's just like everything looks great in this show. There was obviously a ton of production value that went into making this London Holmesian type setting.
Yeah, it looks good.
The Moriarty guest actor might be one of the best guest actors that's come on the show.
Yeah, he's really good too.
And you know, I guess my main, before I get into why this is a good episode, I guess my main problem here is that the plot is a little bit sloppy in that it changes focus halfway through. It goes from Data being the prime player to Data is really not involved at all in the second half of the show. He just kind of stands around.
That's true. It's a lot of Picard at the back half.
Yeah, to talk Moriarty down, even though the holodeck has made Moriarty a nemesis of Data. You think that Data's abilities would somehow come into handling it.
Well, the computer made something that could defeat Data, but it can't defeat Picard, basically.
Yes.
This is the Genie of the Lamp scenario there.
Yeah, yeah.
So Picard is greater than Data, basically, is what the moral of the story is.
That's the math behind the episode. Yep, uh-huh. Picard is greater than Data. It's just, you know, it's sort of, I don't want to sound too negative. I sound negative. I don't really feel negative. I feel this is a...
It's not a terrible episode, yeah.
No.
It's just...
I mean, what was your sort of favorite part, or what would you pull out of it for favorable things?
I kind of liked the conversation with Geordi, and even though it's Pulaski, got Pulaski in the tent forward there too, of talking about how the game is in the mystery kind of thing.
Yeah.
And towards the beginning there, I kind of liked their little conversation there, trying to explain it to him, another humanity teaching moment with Data, and then Pulaski just has to shove her dumb face at everything. It like, challenges him. I'm trying to teach him. You're trying to shut him down, basically.
She interjects herself into a conversation without even turning around.
Exactly. Geordi just sort of shut her down right there. It's like, yeah, we were talking to you though, so go about your business, please.
This is a private conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's you know, the weirdest thing about the Pulaski Data interaction, I continue to hold this thought, is that no one else on the ship sticks up for him. As she
again, even Geordi, who's just talking to him, doesn't take his side at all here.
She's like, well, you can't deductive
reason.
He
tries to, though, a little bit. Geordi's the one that defends him the most, I think, he does defend him a little bit here and saying but he does agree. I mean, the problem is Pulaski and him are coming from the same premise that Data's just doing this from rote memory and not from, like, actual problem solving. But the premise of the idea that Data can't solve brand new problems, they deal with that every single day on the Enterprise.
I know.
Just because he can't figure out in a game, he lives that. He figures out problems constantly when he doesn't know the answer logic.
Yeah, the same thing.
Same kind of things as, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, they're just like, it's like Data's, I don't even know what they say. They're like, Data's good at calculating. He can't figure it out. It's like,
yeah,
he seems to,
but he figures,
he seems to provide the answer to 50% of the problems that the ship runs into.
Right.
And no one else can. It's just kind of a strange duality to what they consider for Data here. And it's interesting. I think we're very early into it now, but it feels like season two is really Data heavy in terms of episodes.
That's pretty much for the whole season, for a whole series here on out, there's a lot of Data centric until like the final. It comes back to Picard in the final season, I think, too.
Yeah.
Mostly Picard in the final season.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Data throughout the series.
They're really starting to hit his what is a man type question. I think Measure a Man is this season, which blatantly just asks that.
yeah, pretty much.
But it's like, to tie into the whole Data thing is the, you know, they create this Moriarty program that becomes sentient life.
Yeah.
And no one seems particularly impressed by this, despite the fact that they all treat Data like he's the sort of most unique creature in the world because he's a machine that can think. Moriarty seems to be a super genius, super intelligent, and the crew is not particularly impressed by it.
Just even the fact they're not impressed that the, like, they're impressed, in the future episode, spoilers, this whole Moriarty thing comes back around here, but, in season 7 or 6, but, the fact that Geordi just created life, nobody's bothered by that. Like, let's take a minute to consider this here. Geordi told a computer to make a thing, and it happened, and he created a living being.
Yep.
Just, you can't take it off of the holodeck, but, like, you know?
No, it's just so bizarre. Through such a loosey-goosey way of creating it, you know?
Yeah.
And then later on in the episode, they mentioned that the fail-safes have been overridden. It all seems very... When Picard is threatened by the guy with the knife.
No.
And it's like, he could have killed you.
I'll take that coin, sir. That's right. Any more you got, too?
Excuse me.
I don't think so. I want all that money. That's right. I want it now.
Data.
This holographic image differs from any I have ever seen. Could he have actually injured you?
More serious than that. I think the mortality failsafe may have been circumvented. He could have killed me.
Oh, let him go, Gov! Come on, he's hurting me!
Data, let him go.
Which, you know,
are they sure the failsafe's overridden? Because they just kind of assume that about certain things.
They do. We've seen it
and
happen.
Like, I'm taking the approach that, I'm watching Deep Space Nine right now, and they had an episode where it was all like all part of a game kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's in season 1 sometime, I think. And I was like saying the entire time, we haven't actually seen anybody die from this thing, so I don't know if it's actually any threat to anybody. So like. The original series did this all the time. They could establish stakes by killing off a red shirt super, super quickly.
Yeah.
But here, there's nobody to kill off. They don't use red shirts that often to establish that there's stakes and everything.
Yes.
So here, you don't know for sure that the failsafes are turned off. You just assume they are. But, I mean, you might not have been in any danger for Moriarty at all. The computer might have stepped in at the very last minute and shut you down.
Right. And it also, it doesn't even, well, I guess it turns out later, Moriarty doesn't even really want to kill them. You know, he just wants to get out of there.
Which could have been the failsafe in the first place. Maybe the computer like programmed Moriarty that way so that he wouldn't actually kill anybody.
That's a good point.
The failsafe it used, you know?
Yeah, that'd be a good point if he's still somehow connected to his original programming.
Yeah.
And that would be the out to get out of there. But yeah, it's strange. It's I was thinking something at the end there. Oh, I can't even remember more. It had something to do with Moriarty's state of being. It's just strange. It's very.
Yeah,
I'm unimpressed.
Well, we'll be revisiting this in like 3 years when you're at the final seasons of this.
I know.
We'll
yeah,
be revisiting Moriarty thing here in even more detail.
I
did like that there was a lot of holodeck techno babble about how it actually works.
Oh, that's
like they're finally like trying to figure that out now.
Yeah, you just reminded me. I was thinking of. I was gonna say that they do sort of a half-assed job. Like they start explaining it and then they're just like and then. It also does some other things.
it still doesn't make sense. The Geordi's explanation does not make any sense.
No,
it tricks you, and it's actually the same size room, but like that doesn't make any sense because I've seen some sprawling landscapes in this place.
Yeah,
that you seem to be able to go to anywhere in.
I've seen people throw rocks like great distances.
Right.
So I mean, if something's showing up on the wall, that still doesn't explain why I don't just walk into the wall. You know,
while you're hitting the wall constantly. Yeah. Oh, I'm in the corner, Data. We got to reset. Hold on.
Or how. Pulaski can be in one section and you just can't contact her.
Yeah.
It would be like
sense.
It would be like if someone was in the room next to you and you just could not have any means of like if Pulaski yelled, couldn't they just hear her?
It doesn't
because she's they claim she's bound and gagged, but later on she is clearly not bound and gagged.
No. She could have shouted for them in the same room as her, so they could have heard her.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they took an effort, basically, to explain that the holodeck is not magic, it's science, but then also just decided that it's worked by magic at the same time.
it's incomprehensible. I just think that the ship in the bottle, which is his return, Moriarty's return, is a generally better episode. I went into this one getting confused, thinking at the end... I was like, is he going to step up? When does he step off the holodeck? Because he does that in Ship in a Bottle. He does not do it in this one. And did you notice the one plot breaking problem with this episode?
Let me know. What is it?
They claim Moriarty can't step off the holodeck, right?
Yeah. They take the paper he gave them and they take it off the holodeck.
Yeah, that's right. That was the... Okay, so when I was reading the synopsis of the original ending for it was that basically Picard figured out because he took something off the deck, off the holodeck, and brought it to him. But then at the same time, the holodeck works on the same technology as the replicators, presumably. So what's to say that it couldn't replicate a piece of paper?
That's
but
true.
Not replicate a person. You know what I mean?
I see.
So at the same time, I don't know if that's plot breaking necessarily.
No, I see no difference between the holodeck and the replicator.
Right.
It seems like it's just sort of... You could think of the holodeck as like a microwave that can create matter and it also just get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah, when they say you can't, it's obviously just a plot thing that you can't go off the holodeck, but I guess that's like the one true failsafe of the entire system, right?
Right.
It's very...
I guess. Very, it's convenient because then they bring it back around later and he can go all of a sudden get off, so I don't know.
Oh, in the next episode?
In the next thing, yeah.
Well, it's all a trick, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because it was all.
It's all on the holodeck.
Whole thing is that it's all taking place on the holodeck. Let's spoil everything for everybody who hasn't watched it yet.
At the end, in the final episode, they all go through three different time periods.
God!
It's just it's such a weird episode to discuss. What'd you think of the of Geordi just having a boat in his workspace and he tells people not to knock into it?
Geordi, I've just had a strange conversation with your assistant. Although it is 3 days until we rendezvous with Starship Victory,
she believes it has already arrived.
Not the starship, my friend. The original. This is my gift to the Victory's Captain Zimbara.
Most unusual.
I served with him as an ensign. Sure wish he'd been in command of this Victory. Wind and sail. That's the proper way to move a ship.
But, Geordi, your Starfleet specialty is antimatter power, dilithium regulators.
That's exactly why this fascinates me, Data. See, it's human nature to love what we don't have. Simpler days, huh?
Right. Like, why do you have to have that here? Don't you have quarters that you could put this in? Like, I know you want it on display for people. I guess for something like that, you don't want to move it too much.
No, absolutely.
But it seems like... It doesn't really play a factor in anything.
No.
That you built a replica of the Victory just because the Victory is visiting them. But,
yeah.
First of all, it seems like quite a big deal. When everybody else visits him, he doesn't make the big replica of their original ship or anything like that. So he really liked the Victory, is all.
They should have mentioned he served on it or something. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, at least give him some reason to want to, like, have such endearment for it, but nope.
It's.
He did. Okay, I'm reading in the synopsis. He actually did previously served as an ensign on the Victory.
Oh, really? Wow. I guess I'm not giving the episode enough credit. Yeah.
Yep.
How very?
It all makes sense.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. I mean, yeah. I don't want to sound negative about this. I love the production value.
It's a good episode.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, the costumes are really great. It looks good in the high definition version.
Mm-hmm.
It's the script is character based. Which is unique for this period of
which
the
show. Which is good. Yeah.
You know, even the sort of lesser episodes of this from the season 2 onward are elevated over season 1. You know, there's something... The personalization of the characters is really coming to a head. And, you know, the show still is sticking with sort of high-concept plots every once in a while. Which they would do through the whole thing. But, you know, from season 3, they sort of stick to the characters, and the characters are the reason that the stories happen.
They're finally understanding how to use Data as a character, I think. In season 1, they didn't, like, get too much into, you know, the fun things you can do as far as a sci-fi genre thing of having the non-human person analyzing humanity kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they don't do as much of that in season 1 as they do in the future here, and that's really where Data's strength episodes are, I think.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think we mentioned earlier, but the interaction Data has with everybody feels like the interaction he would always go on to have.
Yes.
Where
it's more natural.
Yes.
Not this, like, I've never heard of perfume before.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Not the stilted,
a little
sort
more natural
of,
now.
I'm just a sort of walking around Wikipedia entry.
Right.
Where he's actually being involved in things that are going on and, you know, sort of using the other people as a mirror, or not a mirror, but like an entryway into humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very good.
Right.
It feels like a later season show. It feels like it's, you know, I could, you could see something like this in the third or fourth season. Minus Pulaski, of course.
Yeah. You couldn't do it because Pulaski's not there. Wouldn't have any reason for anybody to doubt Data as much as she does.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, before I moved on to my big points, I just wanted to ask you, did you think that Geordi got a little bit huffy when Data solved the original thing at the very start of the
first
show?
Thing? Yeah, he kind of threw a temper tantrum. It didn't seem very becoming of him to do that, but
Data,
I liked it.
I dressed up, I came down here, and you know, it's like, why don't
ruined
you
it immediately.
Why don't you just tell
well,
him?
How does Geordi not know everything? And I guess Data's read. I mean, Data reads everything.
Yeah,
very
Geordi
quickly.
Seemed,
so
Geordi
seemed, doesn't know anything about Sherlock Holmes, but wanted to play the thing in the first place.
Yeah, Geordi's a little bit more ignorant to the era and everything.
Yeah,
and it's also, I guess this kind of reminds me that when they first go in and they start, you know, this is a recurring theme when people sort of make stuff on the holodeck. They walk in and they act like it's real. You know,
like, yeah, they're like astonished by it every single time.
Yeah, they're treating these things as if they're in a museum and they are the actual items that they, you know, like he holds up that brooch or whatever and he's just like, I can't believe it. This is here.
Of course it's here.
Yeah.
They think it can make anything.
It can make you all. And I also wondered,
the detail,
why do you have to dress up to go onto the holodeck? Couldn't it just replicate?
It doesn't make any sense either. Just make you, the things that are seeing you inside of the holodeck are programs, so they can see you however you, they don't actually see you, you know what I mean?
Like, right, yes.
You don't need to be in costume.
No.
They see whoever you want them to.
Which is weird, yeah, it's always something they mention, but couldn't it just replicate some clothes on top of you? You know, if you just stood there and they're just like, here you go, here's
it's your... not the same, it's not the same, you know you're not actually wearing it.
Because, I guess that's not holodeck, I just remember the episode where Picard brings his horse saddle. I don't think he was going on to the holodeck, but
no, he wasn't for that. No,
they just people seem to have a lot of storage space for these Victorian era costumes, and it's like, where are you guys storing it's like, everything? It's like,
you know, the deck 3 costume closet, please.
Deck 3 next. So my big issue with this one is I'm not particularly happy with how the show wraps up. Picard sort of takes the lead.
Yeah.
Data is pushed to the back, and Moriarty really just kind of gives up.
Right.
You know, there's the crew does not do anything to bring around the resolution here. They just say, we can't do this now, maybe we'll be able to do it in the future, so why don't you calm down?
They came up with a good premise for the episode and kind of wrote themselves into a corner where they couldn't actually solve it, basically, I think what happened here.
Yeah, that sounds
the same. Resolution is, okay, I guess I believe you, and I'll do what you want, versus... like, I don't know. What else is Moriarty going to do? I mean, he can blow up the ship and then he will die anyways or whatever, so...
Yes, that's true.
We don't need every single episode to end with the self-destruct countdown. So I don't think it'll be okay if we don't this time.
It's true. It's also, like, what do you have to do to make the ship jar, you know? Because they go into high speeds frequently and they turn frequently and no one ever seems to notice it. But all of a sudden, when Moriarty wants the ship to like jutter around, everyone is acting like they're being thrown off
shake
their feet.
It, yeah.
It's very, very strange. Very interesting.
It's like a snow globe to shake it.
That was really...
have to resettle.
everyone resettles on their feet. That was really my main thing. You know, I was enjoying it the entire way through. It got to the end and I was just like, it kind of that
met. Episode's over now.
Yeah, it's just over. And I was never particularly drawn into it. It's just strange.
That said, it's a fun ride though.
Maybe that's
the whole point of it is back to Geordi's point that the mystery is the fun part, not the resolution of it.
That's a good callback.
I gave him more credit than they deserve for this episode.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into what a couple critics said.
Ariate, this vessel's computer has a vast memory capacity.
How well I know.
You will not be extinguished. We will save this program and, hopefully, in time, when we know enough, bring you back in a form which could leave the holodeck.
Then perhaps we'll meet again, madam.
It could be a long time. Time won't pass for you, but I may be an old woman.
But I'll still fill you with crumpets, madam.
So, Tor.com, Keith and DeCandido says, there's nothing to dislike about this episode, from LeVar Burton's deliberately awful Watson to Picard in a top hat to Pulaski overloading on crumpets to a stellar performance by Daniel Davis, who's Moriarty. The script is also conscious of when a holodeck program takes place, with plenty of 19th century references. It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. That's what he wrote, and he gave it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
AV Club. Where is the AV Club? Here they are. Silence is Lease. Get out of here, Silence is Lease. Elementary Dear Data. He says, I should hate this. I mean, I love the episode when it first aired because it had a talking robot who wore a hat, and it has a lot of elements I've come to dislike about TNG. The holodeck is insanely powerful and dangerous for no good reason. Spiner overacts, which can be clown on styrofoam experience, and the plot hangs in part on Pulaski's contempt for Data. Plus, the episode's got the actor who played the super fey butler from The Nanny, and that is a show that I would dearly love to never think about again. I don't hate Elementary Dear Data, though. I expected to, and was dreading having to watch it for the recap, but something odd happened by the 10-minute mark. Spiner was playing Holmes as broad as Marilyn Monroe at a Hemingway convention, and LeVar Burton was doing a bizarre British accent, but instead of drafting a formal letter of resignation, I started grinning. So I think he enjoyed it a little bit more. He gave it a B+. I feel bad that I have so little to say about this one, but it really doesn't bring anything to the forefront of what I consider an interesting episode. It almost would have been more interesting if they weren't on the holodeck somehow, you know, and he ran into a life form that was like this.
Yeah. Original series would have sent you back in time. This just makes a holodeck.
That's true. Yeah. It would definitely have gone back, and Spock would have met his match as a emotional somebody somewhere.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, Elementary Dear Data, an interesting, interesting thing. It's no even Okana, which we watched after this one. You know, it's not as good, but there's something weird there. There's nothing really weird with this episode. So, I mean, what would you give this ever rating?
There's less to say about the decent, like, middle of the road episodes than there is, like, the bad ones that are the good ones.
It is.
I would say this is middle of the road, like, 3.5 probably as my rating for it.
Yeah, I was thinking 3.5. I think what you just said is, like, totally accurate. Like, when it's middle of the road, it's neither really good nor really bad. It's so difficult to sort of come up with something that's, like, interesting about it. And because of that, I think I'm going to give this a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Would you recommend a non-Trek fan watch this one?
I think I would. As far as holodeck episodes go, it's a pretty decent one.
Yeah.
It does have a little explanation of the holodeck too, if you're a brand new like person on it, because Pulaski plays the dummy who's never been on the holodeck before, kind of thing.
Yeah, which is becoming absurd at this point that people have never been on. Because
you
holodeck.
Have to have somebody be the everyman in every single scene, of every single episode. So, but I think I'd recommend this to a non-Trek fan.
Yeah, I was thinking about it because that's sort of my dividing line between a 4 and a 3. I think I would show this one to somebody just because it's good quality, but I don't know if it really, if they wanted to be like, this is what Star Trek is about, I wonder.
Yeah. I wouldn't lead with it.
Yeah.
But I'd throw it in the mix. I wouldn't lead with it though.
Yeah.
I put it like, you know, track three or four in the playlist maybe.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know.
On the mixtape of your Star Trek.
Yeah, bring them down a little bit. Be like, okay, some of them aren't great, but some of them are decent enough. But yeah.
We're gonna
make a mixtape of Star Trek. Yeah, they're going to do that.
After that bump
follow,
in
follow
track.
The high fidelity rules of making a good mixtape and then do the same thing for Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I haven't watched High Fidelity in a long time, though. Too true. Too good. So, you give it a 3 out of 5. I'll give it a 3.
3.5, yep.
Yeah, 3.5. I'll give it a 3. It is what it is, you know? It's a...
Mm-hmm.
It would probably... It's one of those episodes that when you get into the later season, you'd probably be like, I didn't enjoy that one as much.
But in comparison, it's not great. But.
Early on in here, I'm excited that these shows are actually turning out this way.
It's a breath of fresh air now that they're getting better.
It is, yeah. And everyone's fitting into their little role. Everyone's doing things properly. They're all talking to each other. Pulaski's still there, unfortunately, but things will change. Cool. Yep. Well, thank you, Modi, very much.
Thank you very much.
And we'll bring you back with a high-impact one at some point in the future.
Yeah.
You guys can check Modi out, his YouTube channel. There'll be a link in the description below. And you enjoy the content. As always, a YouTube like or comment is appreciated. iTunes rating review. We're shooting up the charts, and I appreciate it very much. So thank you, guys. So... All right, let's get to the weekend, huh? We can now wrap this thing down, and we will move forward with season 2 sometime in the coming weeks. So thank you, and see you guys later.